Welcome to the quiet little corner of YouTube called Brother Owl's Garden. I'm Brian, and I honor your presence here today. I honor the presence of your light side and your dark side, just like Nangfa and Mitsu here, who have a light side and a dark side. If they let me, I'll show you. We all have a light side and a dark side. These two are examples of that. And then every once in a while, you got somebody like Ollie here who's just all dark side. So what do we mean when we're talking about our light side and our dark side? We're not talking about evil when we say dark side. When we use the phrase embrace your dark side or face your shadow self, we're not talking about, oh, let's just go be evil. We're not talking about evil at all. We're talking about a humongous part of your being that is unconscious. It's completely unconscious. And it is something that the overwhelming majority of people do not face and do not want to face and to some extent cannot face. But when it comes to talking about doing shadow work and facing your shadow self and embracing your dark side, etc., you can't help but mention Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist. To me, he is the go-to resource for understanding and contextualizing what the dark side is and what it means to face it and what it means to avoid it, turn from it. And, you know, what do we do about the dark side? Now, before I begin this conversation with Kiara Windrider coming to us again from India, which I'm looking forward to speaking with him about this, I wanted to share with you several quotes that, now you know I love my quotes, but I just felt that these couldn't be left out of this conversation, but I didn't want them to interrupt the conversation that Kiara and I will be having. So I'm doing this as sort of a prelude for you. And the first quote actually is by Mark Twain. He says, "Everyone is a moon and has a dark side, which he never shows to anybody." So that's our Sam Clemens there. We also have a quote by Kelly Martin. She's a self-worth topic author. And she says, "Your shadow is the leper on the street. It needs your love, not your retreat." Talking about acceptance and embracing rather than denying and avoiding. And there's one more by my man Shams Itabrizi of Tabriz, Iran. I revere this man. He is Rumi's son. He is the activation of what Rumi would blossom into. He says, "The whole universe is summed up in the human being. The devil is not a monster waiting to trap us. He is a voice inside. Look for your devil in yourself, not in others. Don't forget that the one who knows his devil knows his God." And that's Shams. Now, to share with you the Carl Jung quotes, which are essential. He says, "No tree, it is said, can grow to heaven unless its roots reach down to hell." Here's another one. "Even a happy life cannot be without a measure of darkness, and the word happy would lose its meaning if it were not balanced by sadness. Where love rules, there is no will to power, and where power predominates, love is lacking. The one is the shadow of the other." "We cannot change anything unless we accept it." "I don't aspire to be a good man. I aspire to be a whole man." "Wholeness is not achieved by cutting off a portion of one's being, but by integration of the contraries." "How can I be substantial if I do not cast a shadow? I must have a dark side also if I am to be whole." "The most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely." "People will do anything, no matter how absurd, to avoid facing their own souls." "One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious." There is no coming to consciousness without pain. Knowing your own darkness is the best method for dealing with the darkness of other people. In each of us, there is another whom we do not know. Of course, it's speaking about the unconscious. And here's the classic: until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. We cannot change anything until we accept it. Condemnation does not liberate, it oppresses. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. So I think that that's quite a bit of Carl Jung there that fits today's topic. And without any further ado, I just needed to give you those quotes as a prelude. Without any further ado, let's bring in Kiara Windrider from India. All right, so here he is back with us again, gracing us with his presence, wisdom, and sacred offerings. Kiara Windrider from India. Blessings, brother. Thank you for being here again.
Thanks for inviting me once again.
We're talking today about embracing our shadow, our facing our dark side and all of that. We've all got it. For some, it might be recent news, but for most of us, we've got a pretty good idea about it. But I would just add that it's usually a whole lot bigger and more deeply rooted than we had imagined, being that it's located in our unconscious, part of our unconscious. What would you say about what the dark side of our being is, our shadow self? What exactly is it?
Oh, that's a very tricky question, isn't it? Because, I mean, on the surface level, we all know. I mean, that's the laws of morality, you know, the Ten Commandments or whatever, you know, however we label it. And basically the golden rule, you know, just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The problem is our worst enemy is not outside of us. It's ourselves. And it's only ourselves because we are blind to the full spectrum of who we are. Right. And the full dimensionality of who we are.
Right.
Because the shadow only exists on one dimension, in this third dimensional layer, as we call it. And everywhere else is just simply divine expression in all its forms without judgment and without blame. And all it requires is our full understanding. And once we understand, there's no more shadow. So it's like, you know, the sun comes up behind the clouds, shadows are gone. So it's more like, are we willing to face ourselves? Are we willing to face our light? And our unwillingness to face our light and to embrace our light is really the shadow.
That's a really, I love that. That's a really fresh and very deeply insightful flip on things. I really like what you've just presented. In other words, I heard a parable that said something, not a parable, a quote that said, if you perceive paradox in a truth, it's because, you know, there's a level of ignorance involved in that. If there isn't any more ignorance, unawareness, unknowing, then that perception, which is illusory, of a paradox is gone. Yeah. So it's sort of the perspective from which you're viewing something, if it contains some level of unawareness, will appear as paradox.
And facing our ignorance, what is that? Facing our illusions, what is that? You know, first of all, we have this idea, especially those of us who've been on a spiritual path, that somehow we are on this quest to conquer evil, to conquer the darkness, to conquer the shadow, conquer the ignorance. And that itself, you know, that idea of a quest to conquer something is part of the illusion, because it's not about conquering so much as embracing.
Yeah.
Embracing only happens when we understand. And we understand only when we see all sides of it and there's no more judgment.
Yep.
So if there's any inkling with of aspects of myself that are less than, or aspects of myself that I'm trying to subdue, you know, that's a gateway. So what do we do? You know, what does it mean to embrace the darkness? It's not about hiding from the illusion, from the ignorance, from the fear, from the darkness. But once we face it, once we see it, then we make a choice. Okay, this is real, this is real. It's part of our human self, it's
yep.
part of humanity. On this dimension, we're not called necessarily to be perfect, but simply to choose to the best of our ability and to walk in balance. And so it requires, you know, it's a path. That's why it's not something that we can conquer in one night. It's a path of continual choices, constant choices, to, you know, look into the mirror, to see the ugliness, to see the beauty, to see the pain, and to see the mirror of all life, and say, okay, it's all okay right now, but it's not the end. You know, this is where it is right now, and I'm on a journey. And where the journey ends is beyond the duality of third dimensionality. But it requires enormous patience, and it requires the ability to see things as they are. Because what happens, I'm going to talk politics for a moment. You know, we see the world of politics, and we see the illusions. Everyone's been, you know, fooled by those who are holding power over others and are able to create a narrative based on lies, because people are too afraid to understand that we might be lied to by our own governments that we trust, by our own authorities that we've learned to give ourselves to. So that's one level of it, you know, external authority. How do we confront the lies, the deception, the deceit, the control dramas?
Yeah.
And then once we learn to see that, it's somehow easier maybe to see it in another.
Right.
Then can we see it in ourselves?
Right.
I see that I'm doing the same thing, maybe in little ways, maybe not so grand political dramas, but I'm doing that with my brother, with my friend, with my lover, with my family. I'm doing that with my quest for spiritual integrity. I'm doing that with my fear of not having enough, my needs for security and having more, because I don't trust that there's a flow to life where everything is provided. So all these aspects of ourselves where we have learned to mistrust the flow of the universe is our shadow. And so as we face it, you know, it's like a two-edged sword. We are, you know, holding that sword out to the world and say, I'm looking for truth. But the other edge is ourselves. The perception of truth starts with our own understanding of who we are. And yes, you know, we can talk about different levels of reality. There's the ultimate reality, infinite consciousness, universal being. On that level, there's no dark and light. It's all simply is. You know, it's simply an expression of the creativity, the creative forces that are here on this earth. And on that level, there's no darkness at all. Because all choices are complete already. But that's beyond time, beyond space. That's not where we are as humans. And if we can access that aspect of us, if we can hold on to infinite consciousness while remaining in the flow of this human drama, then we have the ability to face and confront our shadows and to unveil. It's not about slaying the dragons. It's about simply unveiling and seeing the truth, and then just, you know, forgiving ourselves for this, you know, great illusion that we've allowed ourselves to land into. And you're never going to be free of that. I mean, you're never going to be free of the shadow until we have personally or collectively moved past this age of duality. Until then, all right, let's embrace it to the extent we can. And let's see ourselves, and then let's hold out the mirror to each other. If we can learn to trust each other.
We're all divine mirrors. That's
we're all divine mirrors.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mentioned several quotes that I wanted to include in the introduction to the video, but there was one more that now you just made this one very prominent. Carl Jung again, the greatest and most important problems of life are all fundamentally insoluble. They can never be solved, but only outgrown. And I think that flows with what you're saying, where it's not to be conquered, you know, and that whole, you know, striving, conquering, defeat, fight, you know, overcome a lot of problems. And this is a good lesson in acceptance. You're not going to beat them. You're not going to triumph over them. You're not going to conquer them. But in due time, you will outgrow them.
Yes.
And as you say, Kiara, we're here doing that.
And meanwhile, we have this wonderful gift that we are given, that some people refer to as karma, which is like, you know, there's the law of consequences. So if I'm too unwilling to see the truth about myself, then I'm going to be given a mirror that gets harsher and harsher the more I'm unwilling to face my own.
Yeah, shadow. There's Pema Chodron. Until you learn the lesson, it will keep coming back, you know.
Yeah.
It's just going to keep cycling back in the rotation until you're ready to get it.
Yeah.
And when you've gotten it, then it doesn't need, you know, you've passed that course. And, you know, it seems to me, Kiara, that when there is an adequate level of unawareness, ignorance meaning unawareness within us, then we start doing a whole lot of projecting onto others our own darkness, our own disdain and disgust of our own darkness.
Yeah.
And I am not criticizing religion here, and I'm not criticizing a specific religion, but an example that makes a lot of sense to me is the word jihad. Jihad initially meant, you know, an inner transformation and purification process, loosely worded. But then as consciousness, awareness, and everything sort of descended from that level, it became a projection onto others who don't think like me, don't share my beliefs, don't have my same theology, whatever you want to call it. I need to eliminate those people over there for their badness, for their darkness. And it is like, to me, the most classic, and it's not only, look, the Spanish Inquisition did the same thing. We're not picking on any particular group here. So you know, do not choose to be offended by this.
And it is it's just a stage, you know.
Yeah.
Religion is a stage of confronting evil outside of us.
Yeah.
And this idea that there's a war between good and evil, until we learn that the war is within ourselves. Then we move out of religion and dogma into a true spiritual journey, like Carl Jung speaks about. It's the hero's quest. And the hero's quest, the magic and the evil, is found within. And that's the journey, you know. So it's like you're walking in a dream. Every character in the dream is you. But we look at them as enemies. We look at them as companions and allies. We look at them as something to conquer. We look at them as if there's a wise man out there, a wise woman out there who can give us something that we need. All this is part of the hero's quest, but it's not outside of us anymore. It had been outside of us.
Yeah.
You know, in a moment of time and moment of history when we didn't have the clarity. But in this age, I think what's beautiful about this time is that more and more people are waking up to their psychological maturity.
Yeah.
And I really believe that we cannot have spiritual maturity unless we also have psychological maturity.
Well, everything affects everything. Everything is interconnected. You can't isolate any of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it, as you say, it's at a certain level in our, let's just say evolution, okay, in our, in our process, we got caught up in the shadows on the wall of the cave. We got caught up in the, you know, in the theater. We got caught up in the projection. And now we've come to a point where a whole lot of people are aware of the light coming from the projector. And, you know, in other words, turning inward to the source of that projection, and are no longer beguiled and hypnotized and entranced and ensnared by the projection, you know. And I think the projector might be the unconscious mind.
Okay, so projection is one of the defense mechanisms that Carl Jung speaks about, and there are others. So there's also denial, there's suppression. Well, denial is basically, you know, it may be clear to everybody else, but it's not clear to me because I have this
blind
idea
spot
that I'm right. It's a blind spot. And it's like being right and wrong is more important than seeing the truth. So the denial comes from that space. And sometimes the denial is based on extreme trauma. If there's been enough trauma in my past from other people or circumstances, then it's like I don't want to get close to the pain again. So I'm going to push it down. I'm going to suppress it. I'm going to deny the shadow because it's too painful. And I think pain is really the key to projection, to denial, to suppression, to all the defense mechanisms until we learn to embrace pain.
You're totally right. And Carl Jung, again, nothing comes to consciousness without pain. I had a dear friend almost, like, I would say vehemently disagree with me, disagree with that quote when I referred to it once. And I just said, I don't know what course you're on, but, you know, pain is a tremendously effective teacher. And we take pain very seriously. We don't blow off pain. We take pain very seriously when it knocks at the door.
Well, let's make a distinction also between pain and suffering.
Sure.
So Buddha said there is suffering in life. But what creates a suffering? It's a denial of our own pain.
Yeah, resistance of some kind.
So it's a resistance to
Or unawareness. Or both.
Yeah. So there doesn't need to be suffering. As soon as we are able to confront the pain and just let it be, experience it, face it, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
Yeah, you know, my friend Glenn Rotman is a professional hypnotherapist. I did an episode with him several months ago where the most prominent thing that he said in the whole interview, I've never forgotten it, is he helps people to deal with their addictions and afflictions. And he said, you know, the one most profound and obvious commonality between all the people that you know, that have received therapy from him and everything, they are unable to sit with their pain.
Well, I want to share a story.
Sure.
Regarding that, because I think if it's too mental, there's not much. You know, people need something to relate to that speaks to them directly. So I had a friend, a very, very close friend that I met in Mount Shasta when I first moved there. And, you know, we met, we were both visiting. We were right next door to each other at, where both of us had been house sitting for someone. And we got to know each other, and you know, it was a beautiful connection, and we ended up as partners for many years. I found out later that about a year before we met, she had been doing a 40-day healing retreat on top of the mountain. And it was a very powerful event. And at the end of that, there were five of them in a car driving down the hill. And for some reason, the car went off the road, hit a tree, everyone was thrown out. My friend, Patricia, was hovering between life and death. And she met this policeman who came to her and said, lady, do you want to live or die? Strange question for a policeman to be asking. He was there by himself, nobody else, no ambulances, nothing. And she said, well, you know, I'm ready to go. But if there's something for me to do, I'm ready to stay. And he said, okay, so be it. He disappeared. Later, she found herself, you know, airlifted to hospital in Sacramento. She was in hospital with 7 breaks in her spine. The doctors told her she would never walk again. She said, they said that she'd have to stay in the hospital at least 6 months for just to be stabilized, to get the required surgeries. And there was no guarantee that she'd ever walk again. While she was there, this male nurse showed up. He would sit with her every day. He would only talk about God. And there was so much joy in his presence that within 2 weeks, she was completely healed. There was no trace of having been injured. She walked out of that hospital 2 weeks, and her entire body was tanned from the magnitude of the healing light. And later she found out who this person was. He was an ascended master. But while she was in the hospital, those 2 weeks she was there, the insurance people came, as always, and they, you know, they offered to provide compensation for what she had suffered. And so, you know, there was something, you know, compensation for this and that and pain and loss and suffering. And she said, no, I can't fill this out. There was no pain. There's no suffering. There's only joy. And here's this woman who is severely injured, spine broken in 7 places, in and out of her body, not knowing if she would survive, not knowing if she'd ever walk, in total joy. And she said later, she said that if I had signed those papers, I wouldn't be in the same place I'm in. It's because she knew that that reality of joy, of going beyond the illusion of outer suffering or pain, was so much greater in the presence of this master, that, you know, it just soaked into every cell of her being. And this because, you know, she was that kind of person. She attracted that kind of experience.
Can I respond with 2 points?
Yeah.
When you were telling me about the insurance form thing, I got a download, whatever you want to call it.
Hmm.
That would have, and I think you said this in your own words already, but as you said that, I envisioned her hand with the pen, and had she signed it, it would have been her free will choice.
Mm.
It would have been
to make that real.
It would have redirected her path,
exactly,
and her frequency and her situation. It would have been, okay, you've opted for that reality, but she consciously declined that reality and ascended to a far higher one that, you know, let's be honest, most people wouldn't have the presence that she had to do that. They would be thinking, yeah, I'm going to get mine. Sure, I'll be a victim. Look at what I get to be a victim. Yeah, I'll be a victim.
Right.
And then I get that money. And I'm not telling people, not, you know, we're not doing legal counseling here, but you know, I just intuited that had she signed, she would have willed a completely different and much lower reality. And I bet you that you and I will agree that whatever money she got would have not blessed her life the way that some people would think, and it would probably be gone before she knew it. The second thing is, I'll just ask one quick question. Babaji?
I'm not going to respond to that.
Okay, you don't need to. And I sensed that for some reason you were, okay, no, not necessary.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, just because, yes, he's part of it, but there's more. I mean, this would be oversimplifying it. Yeah, but he's part of it, and we did end up meeting him in the Himalayas. And that's another whole story.
Okay. But what beautiful stories you share, and there's another one right there. I'll tell you something about me. It's not connected in any way to the essence of the story that you've just shared, but speaking from life experiences, you know, our own personal experiences, I lived in Vietnam for about a year. And there was never a time or a place in my life that I was so exponentially affected by the place that I was at. And by the way, the background noise is I have kittens in here now, and there's no stopping them. So when I was there, it was as if I was poked in the eye with a metal rod all the time, being rubbed the wrong way, to the point where it was beyond destructive for me and to me. And sparing all of the examples of that, what it made me realize, what I experienced and then was able to assess and realize from the experience was, oh my God, do I have a tremendously vast dark side, and I'll even say tremendously dark, that I never thought could be possible. And there it is, smiling at me with an evil grin, if you want to put it that way. And I thought, it's like saying, oh, I could never kill anybody because I believe life is sacred, and you know, I am a nonviolent ahimsa practitioner, and everyone is my kin. You know what? You get pushed into a certain combination of conditions and situations, and surprise, like a jack in the box, boing, there comes your sadistic, grinning dark side saying, what was that again? Yeah. It's kind of like the Joker.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, the mask, except I don't want to put the dark side with evil, but it's not pleasant. And it was a side of me that I literally thought couldn't possibly be there. And wham! And so in retrospect, because it was very hard in real time, I am thankful for the agony and the excruciating frustration and all of that I was subjected to, and then sort of probably stirred it up worse with my inability to respond at a high enough frequency at that point in my life.
Right.
I probably augmented it, magnified it, amplified it, got the lesson real.
Yeah, what a beautiful lesson that was.
Yeah,
and but I it think wasn't this fun is then. True for all of us, that to the extent that we are triggered, and react to a situation rather than simply respond requires choice.
Right.
Reaction comes from the sense of victimization or entitlement,
threat
or persecution or threat. It comes basically from fear. And response comes from love. It comes from knowing that you can trust the universe, even if what's the worst thing that can happen, your physical body dies. I mean, this is saying a lot, but the choice we're given between living in a world of victimization, where we see everything around us as a threat, to be somehow attacked, overcome. Well, overcome is different from attacked. But you live in constant paranoia of what the world could do to you, or what someone else outside of you can take away from you.
Yeah.
That's not a way to live if we are on a path of choice.
Yeah.
That's when we have to look at the big picture and say, no matter what, whatever happens, am I willing to open my heart, keep my heart open, and not react out of fear, out of rage, out of betrayal, out of whatever, the conditioning has been.
Yeah.
And then what? It's not a perfect world. It's a constant, like you talked about Vietnam and the learning it provided. For every single one of us just being on this planet right now, there's hundreds of crocodiles around us.
Yeah.
Whatever framework we put that in. For me, I put that in a framework where I see it as a struggle between the so-called deep state, who is an elitist group of people who are completely heartless, whose agenda and goal is to dominate and control. And basically,
Kiara, I always say of that general kind of thing, anyone or anything that would attempt to override, usurp, or suppress your sovereignty of free will,
right,
is not of the light, to say the least.
No.
So there's your litmus.
Exactly. And we're all given choices every moment. So I'm listening to the news, and my immediate reaction would be hatred. And I was like, for God's sake, how long will these guys continue doing what they're doing?
Yeah.
And then the next choice is making a true choice. It's like, okay, that's a reactive choice. But a true choice is acknowledging that even these people are part of the human family. Despite all the pain that's led to all this evil, they're still here on invitation. They're still here because Mother Earth has called them here. And she obviously has much more compassion than I do, because she's holding them here, keeping them here.
I want to inject some levity for that, though. Mm-hmm. Yeshua said, love you one another as I have loved you. But he didn't say anything about liking. He didn't say, like everybody now, okay? Right. He didn't say that. So, caveat.
No.
Some people you can't like. You're not going to like. Let's just conclude it with that. You're not going to like. And some you may, to some extent, hate, and then you need to check yourself. But again, as we said in the earlier part of the conversation, without the judgment, condemnation, and self-shaming and all that, okay, oh, I hate such and such. I hate so-and-so. Okay, don't immediately say, oh, no, I don't hate because I'm so benevolent. Okay, just say, where's that coming from? What button in me did that push?
Right.
Confucius said, if you hate a man, examine yourself. Anything that you despise in another, turn and look into yourself. What got lit up in you that was triggered by what you're seeing in them? In other words, what part of your shadow do you see in them? That's got you tied up in knots.
And the worst of it, Brian, is that the more we open our hearts, the more we risk not liking ourselves.
You're going to have to expound on that for me.
Well, I'm in a phase right now where I've been spending enormous time by myself. I haven't been really talking with people, relating to the world around me. And it's a very introspective time.
Right.
Sitting in my mother's home. She died a few months ago.
Right.
I'm thinking about her. I'm thinking about my father. Memories are everywhere. everywhere in the house. And I look back at all the times in my life when I was ashamed of them in some way, or irritated by because of a projection
right.
that I had placed on them.
Right.
And now it's like I look at myself here, allow myself to just open my heart, often there's tears, and I find myself in places at times where I absolutely don't like myself for my behaviors in the past. And that's the great challenge, to embrace that aspect of myself, which, you know, 20 years ago, I was a different person. I was on a different path of growth.
Now, as you will be 20 years from now.
Yeah, but now is a choice to keep my heart open, open my heart further, to understand the shadows that have led to choices that I'm ashamed of right now. And I think we all have gone through this, especially with those who are close to us, especially at times when we've needed to separate ourselves and claim our independence or whatever. We've all gone through that in different stages. But there comes a time when we come back full circle to our own doorstep.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, we look into the mirror clearly. And that can be a very painful experience. And no wonder so many of us don't want to go there. But that's where we need to go. That's where we need to face the intensity, the magnitude of our own shame, our own guilt, our own pain, and then love that. I mean, this is not easy for any of us.
No, but you know, Kiara, we all have our light and dark sides.
Yeah.
And you reminded me of verse 2 in the Gospel of Thomas. Jesus said, "He who seeks, let him not cease seeking until he finds. And when he finds, he will be troubled. And when he is troubled, he will be amazed. And he will reign over the all." So I think it's talking about transformation, transfiguration of the consciousness of your being. And so at this point in your life, I'm both of my parents are alive as we record this. And I will never say to you, "I know how you feel." I don't make that mistake. And I will also not say, "Well, when that is the experience I'm having that you're speaking of, I'm sure I'll react this way and respond that way." I don't know. And you don't know until you're there.
No.
But you will come out of this better and clearer and brighter and more loving. You know, grief is the garden of compassion, says Rumi. And, you know, I'll share with you, since I'm dropping quotes left and right today, I'll share you one of my own. Forgive everyone relentlessly. Begin with yourself.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And then at the end of that, you realize that forgiveness was actually never necessary after the fact, after that realization is reached. But while you're at that point, it's quite cathartic and practical and transformative. It's only after you get off the end of, you know, after you get out of the bungee jump that you knew you didn't need to be afraid at the top in the first place, but only after you did it. It's kind of like that. And so I can't speak for your parents, but I'm willing to bet you that they don't hold anything against you. They understand. Absolutely. Understanding replaces Absolutely. Forgiveness in the mind of the master.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, my parents are incredibly beautiful people.
Absolutely.
I speak in the present tense because they're not gone. Yeah.
And in how fact, couldn't they be? Look at you.
Yeah.
How could the two from whence you sprung not be? Look at you. Mm. They did some things right.
And that's true for all of us. We're here. We survived. We made it. We're growing. We're on this path. Whoever we are, wherever we are. And collectively, also, we're on this path of new discovery. We're entering into the garden of the new earth. And, you know, this is an event we've waited for so long, and this is the edge. We're on that, in that transition zone.
Kiara, how does one come to, let's say, come to a place of peace with their shadow self? There is the likelihood, I would say, of shame, and not just judging yourself and condemning, but, you know, but of being ashamed. I've done things that I am utterly ashamed of. Some of them I've gone back and tried to mend and heal, and some of them are just, you know, bigger than you can face right now. And you know, how I wish I could go back in time and undo that. How I wish I knew then what I know now. I actually feel that I did know better, but I made the wrong choice, or I failed to make the wise choice, and all this kind of shoulda, woulda, coulda. And then you know, you're beating yourself up and all that kind of stuff. But there comes a point where you have to just say, in that moment that I had to make a decision, that was the decision that I made. There was an impetus and a reason for it. It might not have been the one I wish I made, but we're constantly in a state of learning. This is a, you know, a school and a triage, this planet. So, but what do you say to somebody that, you know, maybe they,
well, there's
maybe
a,
they're ashamed?
There's a teaching story I'd like to share.
Great.
So it's an autobiography in 5 chapters. Chapter 1, you're walking down the road.
Yeah.
Pretend it's India. There's a big hole in the middle of the road. You fall in.
Yeah.
And the moment you fall in, it's like you're blaming everything around you. It's everything out there is to blame. And you can think of a million reasons to blame and get angry and upset. And, you know, and you dig your way down into an ever deepening spiral. It takes you forever to climb out. Chapter 2, same story, same road, same hole. You fall in. But this time it's like you realize nobody pushed me there. You know, I fell in and I've done this so often before. What's wrong with me? You take out your whip and you start beating yourself up. And same energy, but this time it's projected inwards, not outwards. Just as bad, just as troublesome to the soul. Chapter 3, I'm walking down the same road, same hole. This time I actually see the hole, but it's become a habit. So I fall in. But now I realize, yeah, I've done this before. I know the way out. It doesn't take me long. I stop blaming. I stop shaming. I stop self-flagellating. And I'm out. Chapter 4, same road, same hole. I just walk around it. Chapter 5, I take a different road. So, you know, we're in different places on this path at different times and different aspects of our journey. The moment we realize I'm in chapter 1, that allows me to move to chapter 3. The moment I realize I'm in chapter 3, I'm in chapter 4.
Right.
The moment I realize I'm in chapter 4, then I don't even need to invite experiences that are challenging. Then I can learn from joy. Then I'm on a path of joy in full awakened being, like your little cat over there.
Well, Ali has a question. He would like to know, is there a chapter 6 where you go back and fill the hole for somebody else to not fall in?
There you
or
go.
Is that...
There you go. Yeah, so I think this is, you know, it starts with not blaming and not shaming, not feeling guilty.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes forever to get to that place. You know, we keep digging our hole deeper and deeper and deeper until we learn that. And most often we can't learn that by ourselves. We learn someone else in our space who's compassionate enough to hold us in the light and say, hey, look, you're okay.
I'll never forget one day I was out in my driveway. This was when I had a business that I was running, and I was out in my driveway. I believe I was washing my car or something like that. And a neighbor came by and I was cranky. I was not having a good day. I was crusty, salty, grumpy, all those words. Not a good day for me. And she came by walking her dog and she says, "Hey, Brian, how are you doing?" And I said, "You know what? Not doing well at all. Blah, blah, blah. This is crap. This is, you know, I'm getting hammered by this stressful stuff." And she just looked at me and said, "You know, Brian, you are responsible for your own happiness." And then she smiled and walked away. And my immediate, the honest, you know, knee-jerk reaction was, "Well, aren't you smarmy? You know, isn't that a nice thing to say, to sound, you know, wise and then walk away coldly?" And then I thought, no, there's the ego trying to shirk responsibility and shun taking ownership, of my own choices, ownership of my own choices and free will in life. The ego, intellect, well, actually, you know, pride. No, these things are awful and they're happening to me. And don't get in the way of that. Let, you know, you're not feeling sorry enough for me. You know,
yeah,
like,
and you know, that's,
I feel sorrier for me. So
there's a, even more than pride, there's something that's even more devious, and that's self-pity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's an
identity. I was wallowing in it, and I was having a nice time splashing around, and she came along and, you know, wrecked my little party by saying that. And you know what, Patty, I thank you. I thank her for that. I've never forgotten that, not to use a jaded phrase, but that Zen moment, that aha moment of, And I think that she actually got that from Abraham Hicks, but it doesn't matter where anybody got anything, you know, just that it resonated as true to your being. And as soon as she said that to me, I was found out to myself.
Yeah,
I couldn't pull it off anymore. I couldn't continue wallowing around. I'm not going to tell you that suddenly I was very happy and giddy. I wasn't. I was under a lot of stress from a lot of things that were upsetting me, but I realized, so look what you've been doing about it. And how's that working out for you, as they say? So, you know, you well, are responsible for your own happiness.
There's
own
a beautiful
that.
Ojibwe saying, one of the Native American tribes. It goes, sometimes we go about pitying ourselves, and all the time we're being carried on great big winds across the sky. And it's like, you know, we're being held, we're being carried. We don't see it, we can't see it, because we're so locked into this vision of self-pity. All we see is this narrow, you know, closed-in image.
Yeah.
Ourself.
That's quite similar to, you know, that story, the footprints, you know, two sets of footprints through the sand.
Yeah.
One is Jesus and you. And, you know, what about the part where I saw only one? You know, why did you leave me? I didn't leave you, my child. It was then that I carried you.
Mm-hmm.
We've all seen it so many times, but it really, it's quite beautiful, actually.
Yeah. And how, what happens when you're carried? It's like you have lost your ability to defend yourself or defend your heart. That's when you surrender. That's when you open.
I would use the word, when you're carried, you have surrendered to, you have surrendered the fighting against it. You know, and embraced that you needed help, and it is there for you.
Yeah.
You know, when we enter the dark night of the soul, we're not alone.
Yeah.
It sure feels
like. Sometimes we need to get to that place where we have reached the end of our rope.
Yeah.
But we don't always have to.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, the universe only hears us when we're at the end of our rope. No, the universe is constantly listening, interacting, teaching, protecting, holding, energizing, lifting, moving through us and with us always. But it's our choice then to allow that, which
And
means
sometimes, Kira, it seems like, now I'm not suggesting that this is actually my belief or not, but sometimes it seems like when these life lessons keep coming back and, you know, bonking you in the face, it's almost, or it could be perceived as the universe saying, are you still valuing yourself down here? Do you still hate yourself? Are you still self-loathing? Are you still guilty as all sin? Are you still an absolutely irredeemable, hopeless mess? Just checking in to make sure. Okay, it's still true. Okay, got it. Reset, you know, re-up. You just re-upped on that mindset and that frequency. It's almost like that the universe is saying, you know, how much of this are you going to take? Oh, you want more? You got it. Because, you know, the universe is a short order cook that only says, coming right up.
Yeah.
Coming right up. Whatever you send out. Got it. Coming right up.
And
as you know, wish.
What that brings up for me is one of the greatest obstacles on our path is this idea of sin, or this idea of being a sinner. And, you know, many of us are not consciously walking on that path anymore. You know, it's not something that has held us anymore. But subconsciously, it's not over. Subconsciously, I still see myself as a sinner. I still see myself as limited. I still see myself as a, you know, as a victim, and powerless. And as long as I'm seeing myself as that subconsciously, I'm not going to be able to claim my sovereignty, my power, my beauty, my joy, my divinity, my freedom.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. And when the conscious and the subconscious are pitted against each other, you can be sure that the unconscious wins every time. It will sabotage or override everything.
Right.
So look at the example of affirmations and, you know, New Year's resolutions and all that kind of stuff. Oh, this is some ideal that I'm going to project and you know, announce. But if that's not okay, I had a client once who asked me for help regarding a job interview. Let's just say she wanted some healing, releasing, and energetic work surrounding this job interview. And the moment she contacted me and asked me for that specific purpose, again, I got a hit. It was just, and so my first response to her was, do you truly want this job? Because I knew she didn't. And it took her like 15 minutes to respond. And she said, no. So what she was asking me to do was, in a way, can you make me want this job and get it? And I said, she didn't ask that, but that was energetically what she was presenting to me. And I said, okay, if you truly don't want this job, it's over, even if you get it. If you truly want this job and you are aligned with it, we can do some things. But if you're against yourself within a house divided, it's over. Even if you got the, even if you got it, it's not gonna work. And so, you know, there's the house divided. If we are perceptually divided against ourselves or in conflict with ourselves, so consciously you may say, oh, I don't follow that dogma anymore, but if it's still running as a program in the background, sure.
Yeah,
and I mean, we're not perfect, and technically sin is a term that means off the mark, you know, whatever. But then it's certainly a very loaded word, imbued with, you know, millennia of, let's just say, characteristics about it.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, in the Lord's Prayer, that everybody knows, the Aramaic version of it, it's nothing to do with sin.
Yeah.
It's like the image of fruit that's not ripe yet.
Okay.
So, you know, when we behave in ways that are not ripe, There's nothing wrong with it. We just wait for it to ripen. We give ourselves time. We give ourselves the warmth, the space where the healing light can help us ripen and be ourself more fully.
So and I think welcome that, and face the things that might be holding back.
Yeah.
That process is going to happen anyway, but you know what I mean. That might be something to let go of without condemnation, self-condemnation, self-loathing, judgment, beating yourself up, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, so you're sharing that story of this woman, you know, looking for a job and realizing that that job wasn't her purpose in life.
Yeah.
And I think all of us really are on that same journey. It's like, we're here on this planet. This is our job. This is our purpose. What is it? Why is it that I am here? If I can really question myself deeply regarding that, the sense of purpose, why am I here on this earth? I think it would begin to unravel a few things. It would help us to face the truth of who we are, which also allows us to break out of that victim consciousness. We are here by choice. We are here with a purpose. We are incredibly vast beings with infinite abilities to make a difference. We have infinite creative powers working with us and through us. But until we really develop a sense of purpose and investigate why it is that I'm here, we're still left in this murky place where we're being operated from the subconscious mind.
Well, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct your life and you'll call it fate. The other quote is, the privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are.
Right.
I think that what happens when somebody says, nope, can't go there, not going to do it? What if somebody is choosing to remain in ignorance? What results from that? What if somebody says, nope, not ready? Which in some cases, no, you're not. You're not ready.
Yeah.
There's been many, many, you know, there's things right now that I could cite. Why am I not a Tai Chi master at this point? Why am I not beyond instructor level at those types of spiritually based disciplines? Why did it take me 21 years to read Autobiography of a Yogi after I first bought the book? There's a confession for you. Why did it take me 31 years. So there's some humility. I bought that book 31 years before I actually read it. Of course, I'm only 29, so you can figure out how that happened. But I had the intuitive sense and GPS within me to know at about age 19 what books. And I'm not attributing, you know, it's not all about the books, but there are supplemental peripheral books that no matter what you think, they're good. They're the spiritual classic canon, you know. And I bought them between the ages of 18, 19, 20, let's say 18 to 25. And I've still got them. Of course, they're in another country, somewhere. You know, in storage. But I had the instinct, the intuition to say, need that, or I need to get refreshed on that, or I need to remember what's in that book. And it took me forever to read them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could read the same book when I was a teenager and when I'm 50 and get something completely different out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like every step along the way, we're given what we need and only what we need.
Yeah.
Because we can't, you know, we're going through our own psychological growth process, you know, and our own developmental growth process. So you can't jump.
As they say, you can't step in the same river twice because it's not the same river and it's not the same you.
And that's where compassion comes in. Compassion and compassion for myself along the way. So, you know, it's taken me, 50 years to get to where I can truly be humble enough to acknowledge that I'm not perfect. As a teenager, you know, I was under the illusion that I knew everything there was to know. And why isn't everyone else around me waking up? So,
well, Kiara, I can tell you this. I know all your faults, and if I had any, you would have known mine. That's a honeymooner's quote from Jackie Gleason. I want to tell you this. I think that there's nothing but beauty in you, from what I know of you personally. And I mean, I'm just speaking this off the cuff. There's nothing but beauty and light in you and love and compassion. And that includes your dark side, because that is some sort of a counterbalance, because as we've alluded to in so many different ways and with different examples and stories, this is not about fighting within yourself. This is not about conquering anything or destroying or defeating anything. It's about having the courage, which is a word maybe we didn't use yet, the courage to turn around and face the shadow that's constantly following you, which is, you know, the part of yourself that is, you know, the dark side of the moon. You don't want to look at it because it's not generally fun. And you might be literally ashamed of it. Mm. But you know what? Face it. See it for what it is. Mm. It doesn't mean restrain yourself from judging, but observe it and take it in. Literally without judgment or condemnation. Don't evaluate it. And I would like to add, thank it. Thank it, because it's a messenger. Yes. It's an entire facet of you that, as you can't help but refer to Jung, as Jung said, will lead to your reclamation and attainment of wholeness. Wholeness, completeness.
Exactly. You know, this reminds me of a movie I watched many, many years ago called The Dark Crystal. And in this movie, just to summarize it, there's two tribes, the mystics, who are these very slow-moving, old, very compassionate, but powerless to really do what they came here to do. And then on the other side, there's the Skeksis, who are these evil, dark warlords who are basically, you know, out to conquer, bloodthirsty, bloodlust, you know, all this stuff. And then things happen. Towards the end of the movie, they come together and merge. So there's, and every time in the movie, every time a mystic dies, a Skeksis also dies. Every time a Skeksis dies, a mystic also dies. The numbers have to be always equal.
Balanced.
And then at the end, they come together. They become one. The power, the love. You know, one had power without love. One had love without power. Ah. Now there's love with power. Power with love. And it's a whole different story.
I love it. And there's Marianne Williamson again. We'll just leave that at that. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm going to have to look for that movie now. I had never heard about that, but it's a really good metaphor. And isn't everything metaphor, because it's projection anyway. So I love it. Kiara, I want to thank you again so much for sharing of yourself and so sincerely and humbly and compassionately. And as you know, you are welcome any and every time here. And I speak for my viewers as well as myself in saying thank you for all that you share. It is meaningful, it matters, and it's having an impact, even to an extent beyond what any of us is consciously aware of. And all that you offer helps. And I thank you and I honor you, brother.
You're all heroes on the journey. Thank you.
And these two little kitties would like to remind everybody to face and embrace your dark side as well as your light. Signing off in peace, love, and bliss. Good night.
Thank you.